listening to the North Peace Roundtable podcast, your weekly podcast about theology and the Christian life. I waited.
I was going to say you.
Yeah, you I know.
Waited or messed up?
I'm a professional. I don't mess up. Thanks for tuning in. Episode 145.
Wow.
And it reminds me of Psalm 145. No, I'm just kidding. I know people who do that who are like, September... What's today? August 29th. That's 8:29. And Jeremiah 8:20. I'm like, guys, I don't think that's how it works. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Andrew. With me, as always, is Cameron.
Good morning, everyone.
I was waiting until you took a drink of coffee. And Corland.
Hello, hello.
How's the week been? Win of the week? Any wins this week? Mediocre life updates? Just...
So it was my wife's celebrate. Birthday this week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we...
40.
I don't know if she wants yet.
Oh, sorry. We'll cut that out.
That's right. No, it was a great day. It was Tuesday, and kids and I made her a great dinner. And yeah, it's just a fun way to celebrate her.
Love it.
She's not a big... she's not into too much, but yeah. I ordered a special cake because she's gluten and dairy free, so...
Oh, so it was...
It's overly great. Expensive, and we'll see if it tastes good. I'm picking it up today.
Yeah. It was overly, and it tasted terrible. All right.
Yeah, she doesn't listen. It's fine.
Like Andrew said, celebrate mediocrity, right?
That's yeah.
Right. That's right.
Anything from you, Corland?
This week was pretty good. I don't know. We didn't do too terribly much. We went swimming with Gemma and Kendrin last night. We got home, and we hardly ever do, like, we might go visit somebody in the evening, but even that, not very often, because by the time I get home from work and we get dinner made, then by the time that's all done, it's already... time to get ready for bed. So yeah, we went swimming last night and the kids really enjoyed that. Aaron and I did too. It was good. I don't know.
You didn't let one of your kids poop in the pool, right? Like,
we didn't, but we walked in and we did see the one day since last incident.
I don't know.
Our kids are like, usually they love the free swim on Sundays. I'm like, I think we're probably gonna stop going.
Yeah.
You're a responsible parent to put the...
We walked in and Gemma's potty trained. She every now
I'm
and then
about the baby.
Yeah, I know. But every now and then she has accidents. So we got in there. We're like, should we? I was like, well, she's potty trained. And Aaron was kind of fighting for that. But I was like, but also, Aaron, I'd hate to be the one to set that back to zero.
Yeah, 0 days.
I'd hate to be the one to do that. So maybe this time. Like, it's one thing if it's like 15 days in, then you risk it. But like, if it's one day, like, let them have it. Let them have one day.
Oh, yeah, we did a backyard camp out last Thursday. It was awful. So we've...
Was it the kids' idea or yours? Or like
We had told our kids, like, this summer we'll do like one...
We'll go camping?
Yeah, go camping in the backyard one night. And then it was like, oh man, you have 1 week of summer left until school starts. Man. But it was one of those, like, I had two back-to-back meetings on Thursday night, and, like, not necessarily fun ones. And then I got home, and I'm like, all right, let's go camping.
That's got to be an interesting balance as a pastor. I mean, all three of us have kind of experienced that in different ways with ministry, where you have a day that's maybe not ideal, per se, and then you come home, and it's, you know.
But, yeah, I'm a very light sleeper, so, yeah. And you know, I was
so you didn't sleep.
Yeah, and
then last time you guys went camping, like, poured and you got a hotel or something.
Yeah, we went in Quesnel because we were like driving down to see my parents. This is before Oliver was born.
Oh, really?
Or maybe he was just like a newborn. Anyways,
that's an easy stage to camp with, though.
Really,
newborn? Absolutely. You swaddle them up; they're warm. If anything, they need food. And
right, and then it's done. And then it's bright. At 4 a.m.
They're up that time anyways.
Not my kids.
No? Oh.
No. But yes, it was a gong show. We like didn't sleep much. And then, yeah, it was like thunderstorm, rain cloud came in. I'm like, we're driving to Williams Lake and getting a hotel. So that was our... Anyways, this is the camping podcast. We got two questions that we're going to get through, hopefully. And yeah, I'll just do one at a time. And Corland gave us both of these. So thanks, Corland.
Again. I'm kidding.
I know. You're the one carrying this podcast, man. Every Wednesday night, it's like, so, any ideas? And Corlin always comes through. Way to go, buddy. which is a good plug to send us some questions or topics you want us to talk about. First question is this. How does God interact with our worries? Jesus tells us not to worry. You gave some scripture references, Matthew 6:25, Luke 12:24, 26. But we live in one of the most anxious generations ever to live. How does Jesus enter into this part of our lives, and how do we respond?
Yeah, I think the question surfaced because Aaron is reading a book. I believe it's called The Anxious Generation or something like that.
Okay.
And as a guy who's doing a study about how like the years between 2010 and 2015, things really seem to take a massive leap towards where we are now within that 5-year period. And just how different people interact with the world and the anxieties that come through. I have struggled with anxiety in my life. Like just, I think anyone who struggles with anxiety, most anyone anyways that I know would admit that their anxieties don't necessarily make sense. But again, like what we talked about last week, in some ways they feel like the way I described it to Aaron, I was like, certain of my anxieties that I've dealt with feel like law. I know that they're not, but they feel like law. So they would make it so that I couldn't do certain things with my family because it felt like, well, if I do those things, it's dangerous. So like just an example, I have in the past and even now still wrestle with it some like a crazy anxiety over germs. I don't struggle with it quite as much now because I've been working towards, you know, showing myself that it's not actually that big of a deal if something hits the floor and then you eat it kind of thing. But like, yeah, it's wild. Like I couldn't go in public and touch door handles in the normal spots because that's where everybody touches them kind of thing. And like, that's a really small example.
Sure.
But like Aaron and I know individuals who really struggle and wrestle with anxiety that is really tough to get over and really tough to work through. And I think of all the verses in the Bible where I'm paraphrasing here, but where it's the idea of cast your worries on God. And I think as Christians, we often just view that as like, well, if you just give your worries to God, they're just gone. You don't have to work through that anymore. You like, it's almost like you get given a new brain. So I was just wondering, like as Christians, as fellow believers, how do we encourage people who are struggling with anxiety? What does it actually mean to give your worries to God?
Yep.
Like, is there like a 12-step process that you can find in a book somewhere to like make sure you're giving them to God correctly so you're not anxious again? Or is there more depth to it than that? Is it more simple than that?
Yep.
Have you struggled with anxiety ever, Andrew?
Not really. I view depression and anxiety two ways. One is there's a chemical imbalance in your brain. That's one. And then the other is, because I think sometimes we confuse the two, and then Christians do a really bad job of like, well, just like stop being sad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think there is, when it comes to mental health, there are like chemical imbalances in your brain that cause you to have depression, anxiety, things like that. But then I think there's also a different kind where you are just sad about things, or you're just worrying about stuff and you're anxious. I think our world does not see the difference, and the solution for everything is, well, you need intense therapy and you need drugs to help you deal with that. When I think there is actually some kinds of anxiety that, I think that's more what the Bible's talking about. I think the Bible, like when Paul writes Philippians, I don't think mental health was a thing in the ancient world. I don't think it as it is in our day and age.
The same way.
Where it's like, Philippians 4, right? The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So Paul says like, the Lord is here. He's with you. You don't have to be anxious about anything. So I know that some people are like, well, that doesn't apply to my mental health. And I'm like, okay, but it's in here. It's the living word of God. And there's truth to it where it's like, you actually, God is with you. He's at hand. You don't have to be anxious about anything. So I think there's ways that as Christians, we can work through some of these things, but yeah, it's not like a bring, all my problems are gone.
Yeah.
So for instance, our daughter, if I would have taken Lucy to a doctor, I know for sure they would have said, your daughter has anxiety and depression. We should probably put her on some medication. Because she would be very, very anxious about falling asleep at night and having panic attacks that now it's 9:15 and I'm still not asleep. Oh my goodness, I'm never going to fall asleep. And just like spiraling and being anxious. And then anytime me and Molly would leave, oh, we're going on a date. Oh, when are you coming back? And then if we were ever like gone for an evening or like overnight, it would be like, and you've watched our kids overnight. Well, you didn't. Your wife did. Yeah, you were gone.
He's pointing.
But yeah, I have to, you know, we get a FaceTime from Lucy and in tears. And
I think she slept with my wife one night.
Yeah, she did. Usually the first night she's in a terrible mess and then the next night she's usually fine. But anyways, so Molly and I, we were like, yeah, we're not going to take her to a doctor and be like, here, this medication will just even you out and you won't be anxious anymore. Mm-hmm. We just decided, and you know, some people listening might be like, you guys are jerks, but we were like, we're just going to like make her do the hard thing and just be like, you know what? And in those moments, try and, okay, what is anxiety, Lucy? You're worrying about things. What, you're worrying about something that hasn't even happened. So you're spiraling over something that is not even true. Oh, okay. And like walk her through that. And you know, the most recent time, I guess would be in April. We went to a conference down in the Lower Mainland, and yeah, Lucy and Ruby and Oliver stayed with Cam and Tanya. But we got a FaceTime that first night at like 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. and Lucy is in tears, and we just, okay, but okay. So what's true? Are we coming back tomorrow? Yes. Okay. So have we abandoned you forever? No. Okay. Are you safe with Auntie Tanya? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about what is true. And then we often say like, what's happening right now, Lucy, is you're believing lies. Actually, the lie that you're believing is that we're never coming home. Is that true? No. Oh, okay. So, and it's been several years of like,
yeah,
waking up at night. Okay. Are you going to fall asleep?
Yeah.
Yes. So what lie are you believing? That I'm never going to fall asleep. Okay. Is that true? No, of course not. Oh, okay. So then, sorry, this is a long story, but just to show, like they just went to Camp Sagatawa for a week and I was like, oh boy, this is going to be rough. And like, she did fine.
Yeah.
Didn't get any panic phone calls, anything like that. So, and Lucy is like way better now after 3 years of just, you know what? We're just going to be the jerk who's like, no, actually, you're fine. Go back to bed. Lie down. You will fall asleep. We're not allowing you to believe the anxious thoughts that you are believing.
Yeah.
So all that to say, I think there's partly our culture. Our culture has done lots of great stuff to help people with mental health problems. Our culture has also done a lot of terrible things to make, in my opinion, mental health worse. And we're all going, wow, everyone is struggling even more with mental health things. Interesting. And I think maybe what we're doing is like not helping everyone.
I think the shift that Coraline, you referenced, comes down to this idea or this notion that we should live without discomfort in any way, yes, whether emotional or physical.
Yep, totally.
That we cannot exist without discomfort or challenge or opposition. So in my world, yesterday I had a terrible afternoon with really difficult conversations. Today I'm going to have another one. I overthink a lot of them.
Wait, you're having lunch with me today. Is that what you mean?
Surprise. So I wrestle with, you know, a sinking feeling often, like in the evenings, and I'm trying to prepare and,
yeah.
But I don't like to remove that would be like, interesting also, but our society hates discomfort and so I think that, you know, we tend to try to suppress or medicate any feeling of discomfort, and that's a really interesting challenge because it goes down those rabbit holes like you said of you know, that feeling, that anxiousness you're feeling could actually be healthy. It could actually be a survival instinct also. It could actually prevent you from harm if you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right, everything's wrong. Like, that's also a tactic to avoid danger.
Sure.
Yeah.
That is given by God to do. right?
Yeah, but then there's also, like you said, worry that's unsubstantiated that you go down all these trails.
I remember once I told my counselor, I was in a session. I had been, it was a different thing that I was anxious about this one time. And
Do you lie on a couch when you're in counseling?
I do not.
Is that a thing? Okay, that's just on TV.
Not for me.
Okay. Anyways.
But I was telling him, essentially I was like, I am crazy anxious today. And I don't remember exactly how the conversation played out, but it was like, okay, here is what my mind thinks is going to happen. And so he just had me lay out on the table what I thought step by step was going to happen and why I was freaking out.
Yeah.
And like, after I finished, he's told me later, he apologized. He's like, I don't know that that was the right response, but in that moment, I think it was. I told him about my anxieties and he actually laughed at me. Like his reaction was a laugh. He doesn't necessarily remember that, but I remember that. And it didn't hurt because in that moment, I was at a place where after I told him about the step-by-step of the spiral that I thought was happening.
Totally.
To have somebody much older than me, much wiser than me, laugh at me because of that was like,
oh, right.
Oh, that is kind of laughable that I would think that.
Totally.
And be like basically unable to continue with my day because I thought that. I'm not saying that's the right response for everyone and everything.
Yeah,
instant.
You heard it here first, folks. Yeah. When people share anxieties with you, laugh in their face.
But it is, you're right. Like for me, it was a journey of learning. And this is not necessarily, I realize germophobia is maybe not a great example for it. Because I would say the anxiety showed more at home or I was able to internalize it more. But like, yeah, I think that sticking to what is true is most important in those moments.
Yeah.
And I think that is how Jesus enters into our anxieties, is to be like, if he claims he is the way, the truth, and the life, I think that we can set our present struggles at the foot of the cross and say, you know what, Lord, I'm anxious about this. I can maybe see and know that this won't happen, but even if it does, I'm going to trust you that you are enough.
Sure. I think there's, like on that germophobia thing, as you were sharing, I don't even know if I've ever shared, but I've made decisions in my own life. I don't actually eat off my kids' plates. I don't let food touch at home. And it's funny because I don't live trapped in this idea, you know, that something terrible will happen. I've just made a choice the way I process. I wouldn't eat food off the floor. I do grab the top of the tip with the door handle, sometimes with my ring finger or a pinky.
Yeah.
But it's like there are those two that don't leave their home or shave their head because they're like that's an illness. But yeah, just on another thought, Corlin's bald.
Yeah, he pointed at Corlin when he said
that's not why.
But. Yeah, settled on Howie. I was thinking though, and I've shared before that I've found myself in seasons where, and even like within the last few months, where like everything's great and like today just feels terrible, and I can't put my finger on it, but I think by the grace of God, it is looking at that bigger picture and understanding, well, while I'm sitting in this feeling, I can appreciate and understand that it's not true.
Yep.
And I've shared also before that I could go to a physician and talk about this state and they'd probably think, oh, that's some sort of form of depression and medicate something. But sometimes I think if you sit in just the reality of a broken world, then it is pretty overwhelming. Like, and I think casting those anxieties or fears on God and is by his grace, the ability to realize that despite all of this, God is still sovereign. Despite all this brokenness, God there, the end we still know. So it doesn't mean that we change that current reality. And that's often what the definition of healing is from trauma. It's not forgetting. It's that when the memory is associated with the point of what's causing you anxiousness, doesn't equate to you falling apart, but
yeah, you're able to live in the present instead of always living in the what if of the past.
And we used to do a lot of work when I was a chaplain just on having people understand that healing doesn't mean forgetting, like forgive and forget. It's like, okay, I get it, but it's not you'll always remember what happened to you, but those feelings attached to that you're going to work through and process, and that is the true definition of healing. So you may always feel anxious around the person that caused you harm, but you've surrendered that to God and you're working through that healing process
and learning to place boundaries in place so that you have healthy reactions and actions to do when situations like that arise.
Yep. Yeah, I think too, like, I know sometimes Christians can say kind of like the trite answers, you know, just, oh, just cast your anxieties on Jesus. But it's not wrong. Like, those, that's actually true, right? So I know sometimes we're like, don't just give me the trite answer. But like, it works, right? Yeah. So even like Jesus, right? I'll read the passage, like Luke 12, he says to his disciples, I tell you, don't be anxious about your life, what you'll eat, or your body, what you'll put on. Life is more than food, body more than clothing. And then he gives examples, like God takes care of the birds. Aren't you more valuable than birds? It's almost like a therapy session. You can see Jesus being like, think about birds. Oh, right, yeah, God does take care of birds. You're worth more than a bird, aren't you? Yeah, that's true. I guess you're right, right? And, you know, think about the flowers. They grow. They don't toil or spin. Even Solomon wasn't like that. So if God takes care of grass, which is alive, and then tomorrow it's dead, isn't he going to take care of you? It's like, oh, right, yes, he will. And so I think there's a process where, yeah, you're worried. And I've done this. So like I've shared before, you asked, you know, have I ever really struggled with anxiety? Not really, but a few years ago, you know, Ruby had a seizure, and it was while she was taking a bath, and it was kind of like pretty scary. And then there was a few times after that where Ruby was like, oh, can I have a bath? And I'm like, no, because it's like, but then it was silly because I'm like, really? So I'm worried about something that it's not real. It hasn't happened. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm assuming that it will happen every single time now that Ruby. Yeah. So I had to actually like bring that to the Lord and just be like, God, why am I like so freaking out about something? Do I not trust that you'll take care of my daughter? So you just had, it was like working through that. Oh, right. God does care immensely about my family and he's going to watch over us. So actually, yeah. And I just had to force, I'm not going to be the dad that's like, you're never allowed to take a bath again.
Yeah.
So I was like, no, go ahead. Like,
I think I appreciate what you said about God caring for us, right? Throughout scripture, we see that despite our inadequacies, despite our choices, God cares about us. And that doesn't mean that life is going to be without its difficulties, without its scary and tough situations, sad situations. I think that there's, I think casting your fears on God is that training your mind, that renewal of your mind that Paul talks about in Romans, where it is training your mind to actually trust that God means that when he says that he loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that then I think that shifts the perspective. Cause one of the things that I notice is often people that struggle with anxieties and fears, it's often because they have this perspective, including myself. So I speak from experiences like the world is out to get me and how I want to be. And if you can shift the view off of that to like, okay, but I actually serve the Creator who loves me. Some of those fears can still be present, but they don't have power over you when you recognize that you
sure.
When you begin to learn and recognize that God is for you, not against you, and that even in the hard things. So one of the things that I used to always tell myself when I was struggling with anxiety would be, okay, Lord, I know that I'm freaking out about something that is not true. But even if it does happen, I will trust that you are good no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then you're trusting in the character of God. You're trusting that his promise to be Emmanuel, which means God with us, is true. So even if your worst case scenario happens, you have the God of the universe who loves you and who has sent his son to die for you, walking with you through that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Let's unpack something quick though, because I think that when people think of anxieties or worries now, it's mostly related to their ability to provide for themselves and their current financial state. And it's no secret that life is ridiculously expensive. I paid $7.29 for 18 eggs last night at Save-On, and because we were out this morning, I'm like, oh my goodness. And thank God that's not an issue at the moment, but my wife and I come from, like, I lived in social housing as a kid off a reserve, and my wife grew up in a very terrible part of the world. And throughout our, like, even marriage, when we first got married, I made $18 an hour and she didn't work. And, you know, I took a bunch of different jobs because I've always kind of been resourceful because we came from nothing and there's no one helping. But sometimes, but there's also a pride thing that impacts people now. And I've seen it throughout my over decade at the Salvation Army where people wouldn't ask for help. So when we think right now of someone maybe in our congregation facing potential job loss or facing financial constraints, often pride is a blocker that the worry and anxiousness is actually created because the idea of, am I going to have to sell my home and move to a trailer?
Yeah.
Could you imagine the thoughts that people would have and that worry and that
the
feeling?
Social repercussions or whatever.
Oh, could you imagine if I had to, you know, if I lost my job and I had to go clean floors or like, so it's quite interesting because the Bible doesn't promise that it's going to be wonderful, but the needs, the daily bread is not, we're not, none of us are living with daily bread. We're living with extravagant daily buffet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of standing in the line at the food bank, people get into the line around 8 a.m. because they open at 10. Would you do that? Because God's more than happy with you standing in the food bank line to get free daily bread.
Yeah. Yeah.
But our society doesn't do that. And the worry and anxiety is so high because of that. And someone listening might think, oh, easy for you to say. Like, I've been through that a few times. And thank God today it's a different situation. But I actually don't care if I get fired tomorrow because I've been fired in the past. And it was actually the best thing for me. I got a... I walked into two restaurants and offered to clean their floors at night. Made a lot of money, never worked during the day. It was a terrible situation for me as a young man, but it was actually great. So I think when people have not experienced that or they come from a place in life where, you know, oh, my parents would be so disappointed in me. Everyone will make fun of me. I would lose my social circle. I think some of that anxiety is just created. And they sit in that because pride and fear of what everyone else will think is so heavy. And I can appreciate how heavy it is. But again, we don't want discomfort. We don't want the biblical truth to say Jesus is more than fine with you driving a old crappy car because it gets you from point A to point B. He doesn't give a rip about your the hole in your ceiling if 99% of your ceiling is still fine and dry. And people really struggle with that thought. Like, no, God wants the best for me. I don't know. I push back on that because God is more than fine. I think if you have to stand in the Salvation Army food bank line and get vegetables and bread for that day, and if you're not willing to do that, then I think you could be the source of some of your own anxiety. And that, I think, would be against biblical principles.
And that is countercultural to say that, though, right? Because we are often taught right now that your anxieties are external forces pushing in on you instead of your internal forces pushing in on yourself, right? Like you're... like it's not just a narrative in your head, or even if we say that, we try to make it so that everybody's feelings about those things are validated instead of being able to push back and say, hey, like,
well, it's like when your counselor like laughed.
Yeah.
Right. In our world, it's like, no, do not do that. You need to validate the things that he's feeling instead of being like, the things you're feeling are ridiculous. Do you hear yourself? Like,
yeah.
But I think there is this part of like victimhood. And again, I gotta clarify, I'm not saying this is everyone, you know what I mean? Yeah. But there is this kind of like, I love what you said, Cam, because, you know, we were saying, okay, as a Christian, okay, cast your anxieties on Jesus because he cares for you. Well, maybe Jesus caring for you is just like, go to the food bank, right? Maybe God's like, hello, I've given you things to like, go take care of yourself, right?
It's like it's like the story of the guy on the roof and flood, and waters are rising, and a boat drives by, and they're like, hey, get in, we're going to save you. And he's like, no, the Lord will save
me. The Lord will save me. Yeah.
Drive away, and like three other boats come and do the same thing. He ends up drowning, and in heaven, he's like, what in the world, God? Like, why didn't you save me?
Four boats.
Four boats, dude. Like, come on.
But I think that is like social status and position.
It is,
It's very detrimental.
And I think.
Our culture.
Sir. Yeah. And you've said it a few times, just like we just don't like discomfort. And even with all, you know, Lucy again, she's struggles with any kind of discomfort. I don't want to go play outside because there's bugs out there. And what if I get stung? And then she starts getting anxious about that. Or it's too hot outside and the sun is too hot. And I'm so miserable and I'm going to, you know, those kind of things. And we just like make her do it. And people, I know people would be like,
yeah. And there may be room for grace in certain moments, depending on people's situations.
Sure,
to,
but
relax. But yeah. They're also, yeah.
For our daughter, we've just kind of forced her, you know what? We're not going to spend the whole summer inside because there's bugs outside. Do you see how ridiculous that is? Okay, let's go outside.
And then they sleep outside at camp on an open
stage. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. So, yeah. And then, you know, I just recently got stung by a bee in our backyard. And then, yeah, Lucy, like, books it inside. But I came and showed her, look at my hand. Do you see?
It's, like, swollen.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily, I didn't have, a big allergic reaction. I'm fine, Lucy. But trying to just walk her through, like, a lot of times the fears that you have are so irrational. Let's talk about them. Let's go outside. Yeah. And then it was actually like, look, I'm going to make you like hold this bug. And like, oh, see, it didn't kill you to hold that grasshopper. Yeah. Wow. And now she's like way better. Or even, and this is a line my wife will often say to her when it's so hot, I'm dying. She's like, okay, Lucy, stop. Feel the discomfort you're feeling right now.
Yeah.
It's hot, right? And she's like, yes. Ah, okay. But like, are you going to die? No. And my wife actually makes her feel the discomfort right now. It's not the end of the world. Mm. Yeah. Even yesterday, it was like freaking out about a snack and I'm going to die because it's an hour till dinner. And we just kind of said, okay, Lucy, think about it. You've had 2 meals and 2 snacks already today. So feel the discomfort. Is your tummy rumbling? Yeah, mine too. But we're going to eat in an hour, so you're going to be fine. Right? Like, so I think there is part of our world that is just not helpful where we feel like we have to validate.
Or fix everything in the moment.
Yeah, sorry. Validate's the wrong word because it's sure, you're feeling that. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the moment, I have to fix immediately it's actually okay for you to sit in this for a little bit.
Yeah. I actually encourage some of the folks that are supervisors, like, solving problems immediately that are not emergencies are not helpful in leadership. It's like, wait an hour, think about it. Often the person will message back, oh, figured it out. That's what you're paid to do. So I think, solving and making every fix immediate actually creates this culture of immediate response. Like, I have a problem, it should be solved immediately. Feel the discomfort, sit in it for a bit, sort it out. Again, outside of emergency and outside of, true... And I think there's a way to distinguish between a true mental health crisis and discomfort that could produce anxious thoughts and feelings. And like I said, anxiousness is not always a negative. It is, you walk into a place and you're like, this doesn't feel right. I'm a little concerned about that. Well, maybe you have a very valid and legitimate reason to feel that. Maybe you want to get out of there. Maybe it's not a good environment for you to null and void that entire feeling or to ignore it.
So I think what the process of healing means that you don't ignore the warning bells, but you learn to understand if it's like for example, if you're in a building and the fire alarm goes off and you don't see any fire, you're not gonna be like, doesn't apply to me. Who cares?
Oh, there's people, right? When I worked on the downtown east side for years and they'd come for their little urban mission and they'd walk down the back alley thinking, God's protecting me. I cast all my cares and worry. You moron, you're going to get robbed and maybe beat up. Like, use wisdom and discernment.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Like,
totally.
That gut feeling that feels terrible, like, listen to it. Feel the discomfort and get the heck out of there.
Again, there may be times where that discomfort is necessary to move through, right?
Sure.
Like,
sure.
Yeah. But to use wisdom and in those moments be learning that we can trust God. So I think some of these things, even in that 2010 to 2015 period where we saw a crazy spike in some of these conditions, is really when social media started taking off. And even like iPhone came out, 2007?
I don't remember.
I think it was 2007. And so we have grown into a generations that have unlimited access to what other people think life should look like. And we have unlimited access to immediate relief. Sure. There's been studies that show that even just seeing your phone sitting on the table provides relief for some people. Like literally in their brain, chemicals are released that say, oh, it's okay. Everything's okay. And so we live in a world where that's heavily affected by that. I think healthy, I don't know that you can provide like a 12-step program per se. Some people really like lists to fill. I think with anxiety and following Jesus, I think that there's a really, really good first step is to actually just look at the rest of the garden. And what I mean by that is that instead of getting caught up looking at the one tree in front of you that is incredibly large in your view, right? You can't think of anything else, is to actually take that step back and to say, okay, God, I trust you. I know that you have fearfully and wonderfully made me. I know that you care about me because you say that you care about the birds, about the grass, and to like to stop yourself there. I mean, there's plenty of research about tactics to deal with anxiety, but even I can't remember the statistics, but your brain thinks a lot faster than you can speak. So just simply, I know people get really weird when you talk about there being power in words, but literally just saying something out loud, even having to mouth it, not necessarily say it physically out loud, forces your brain to slow down. So if you're in a downward spiral of thoughts, to stop and to start reminding yourself of truth slowly, repetitively, it can help your mind stop that process.
So create your own reality with your words.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
not.
Joyce Meyer.
I am who I say I am.
No. Okay, you know, we're just
you know that I am bugging you. It is true. We do that with our kids. Say the thing out loud so that you actually hear yourself saying it. Yeah. Yes, totally. Not I'm creating my own destiny. No,
my
not
kids
that.
Are like, I'm hungry. I'm like, perfect, because I'm cooking.
Or you do the, oh, I thought your name was Lucy. I'm all hungry. Oh, man. That doesn't help. There we go. We solved anxiety. No, but for real, I think you can trust what Jesus says. But again, it doesn't mean, it's not the trite answer. I'll just do this and all your problems will be gone. I think it's a continual thing. When I worry or when I have anxious thoughts, I'm continually bringing them to Jesus and being like, so.
But also listening to his other commands.
Sure.
Don't be proud. Be humble. Yep. You have to hold them in this tension. It's like, I just don't want to be anxious. It's like, explore that anxiety.
Yes.
Where does it come from?
Yep.
Get a counselor. Talk to someone about
totally.
That. Talk to Corlin.
Yes. Corlin's nodding in agreement. All right. Well, do we want to? We got time. Second question, switching gears, but maybe not really. Maybe they connect. When raising children who sin, anxiety, sin, see the connection?
Oh,
I'm just kidding. Everyone's going to be like, I hate Andrew. When raising children who sin, what healthy Christ-like ways do we react and act when our kids do wrong? Does it change when they get older? Does it change when they don't believe? So basically, like how do you discipline or
what should our reaction be as parents when our children
with our kids
are not angels?
Yeah.
There's fallen angels, I guess, but okay.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, lots of thoughts. We could talk the whole episode about this. Oh, and that's the person's gonna be like, why don't you just stop and then do the next episode? Yeah, I think it's funny. I had a conversation with a guy once that he was like, from a Christian perspective, my kids, before they make a profession of faith, they're lost. They're not Christians. And I remember having a conversation. I mean, for some guys, they disagree with that. No, because they're in the covenant, because I am and blah, blah, and we're not going to go there. But he was basically like, well, you treat your kids like Christians, right? I'm like, no. They're not. They're lost, right? So and now Lucy and Ruby have both made professions of faith, which is amazing, but Oliver hasn't. And oh man, we pray the sin nature's strong in that kid. No, I'm just kidding.
The dark side.
So when my kids would sin, I took it as an opportunity to, one, teach them about the law, and then teach them about grace. And now discipline looks different after my kids have made a profession of faith, because it's like, well, you're a follower of Jesus now, right? So I'm trying to think of it, a specific example, but it's like, well, you know, you lied, and because we follow Jesus, we actually don't have to lie. We can face the truth, right? And we don't have to cover up because Jesus has paid for all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But early on, I would take the opportunity to actually... And whatever, it's controversial, but whether it's spanking or whatever, to teach my kids there's consequences, right? That's what the law is for. The law exposes, like, our sinfulness, The law can't save us, right? But it shows us, oh man, how bad we are.
Yeah.
Right. So when my kids would do things, I would discipline them. And the consequences obviously vary depending on what they do, right? But then take that opportunity to explain why. And then it doesn't always happen because, you know, you're a parent and you're tired and dinner's on and you're like, you know what I mean? But I would often try as best as I could to use that opportunity to explain the gospel to them, why we don't have to do this because Jesus has done this for us. And again, like I said, don't picture in your mind this like holy moment with Pastor Andrew and he's like lots of times it just didn't happen. Yeah. But I would try, okay, I have a little bit more time here. We're not in a grocery store and my kid's screaming. Okay, yeah. I'm at home, right? And then try and explain, you know, you don't have to do this because Jesus has done this for you and blah, blah, blah. And if you believe in it. Anyways, so it sounds very like, oh, that's so nice and Christian.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it was really messy, but I think discipline is so important. One, because I don't want my kids to be terrible human beings. Like,
yeah, I'm definitely the authoritarian at home. Yeah. But I've shared before, like we did spanks when the kids were super young, but it's been years and years because one laughed at me and the other one, it just didn't work. And so that, so we changed our tactic, but I remember not giving like the gospel response when they were super young, because sure. I thought I'm modeling for them what, you know, it means to live in a way that's respectful and righteous. And so for my, you know, my 1-year-old and my 2-year-old, I'm not thinking of sinning against the holy God. I'm thinking of this being, this little human that needs to learn some basics. You know what I mean? Like, yeah,
totally.
You know, saying no to me in defying and disobeying your parents, I didn't think that they were rationalizing or looking through the filter of I'm choosing a sinful response. They were living in their sin nature.
Sure.
And I believe our responsibility as parents, until there is an age of awareness and obviously a profession of faith, is to, through our own conviction, raise them in a way that makes them hopefully to be a productive member of society.
Yeah.
And then always through the lens of the gospel, of course, because we love them. But as you said, like, talking to a 2-year-old or navigating the gospel message may be a little, I think you have to live the gospel because it may be just a little ineffective to a degree.
Yeah.
To a baby.
I think even, I like what you're saying, and maybe I wasn't clear. Yeah, I didn't sit down and give a full gospel presentation. But even the fact that you discipline your kids is teaching them that there's an authority that exists beyond themselves.
And it's loving. So it's going to be harsh. It may feel harsh because you're 3 years old, but tonight it's loving. You know, I'm kissing you on the head. I'm hugging you. I'm holding you. And that's actually showing them what a triune God.
Yeah. When you discipline your kids, I think you're teaching them you're not the center of the universe and you are, there's an authority that exists above you. You're showing them God the Father, right, in your discipline, because that's exactly what, I mean, Hebrews 12 says, like, God disciplines the ones that he loves, and no discipline is fun at the time, but it's produces fruitfulness. That's my paraphrase, obviously. But I think even just doing that in a loving way, you're showing, oh, okay, dad or mom, okay, they're in charge. Oh, there's consequences when I do things that are wrong. Oh, okay. And then I think, as they get older, and their cognitive, you know, abilities are more. Like, I remember Lucy in defiance, like, punched me once or kicked me when she was one. And I'm like, whoa, like.
Sure.
So, but she's one. So I wasn't like, did you know about the penal substitutionary atonement of Jesus? And because she doesn't understand that. It was just kind of like, there's an immediate consequence. You will not do this to your father, blah, 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 blah. And I think in that moment, you're still teaching them valuable things.
Yeah.
And it's just recently, in the last couple of years, and as our girls are older, even Oliver, he's 5, where you have, like, we haven't given out a spanking a long time, because they're just, I don't know, for me to spank my 11-year-old seems a little weird, right?
Like, no, it absolutely does, and when you could just take away a screen time.
Yeah, or we just assign chores So it's kind of like you're going to mouth back. Well, one, we sit down and we talk about why that's wrong for you to talk back to. I like that you said, I don't say like, don't talk to your mother like that. I say like, how dare you talk to my wife like that? And that you should see their faces. It's kind of like, that's oh, right. man. Yeah. And then it's like, actually, you're going to go outside and weed the garden now for the next hour. So then there's like immediate consequences. So but I think the threat of like a, you know, physical discipline is just different. But, like, and don't hear me wrong. For when our kids were little, it worked, a little swat on the bum or whatever. Because they knew, okay, there's an immediate consequence. But now it would just, I think my kids would laugh at me. It would just seem weird. I'm 11 years old.
I'm reminded of the way I grew up, though, and it was always in fear of not making it to heaven and in fear of the rapture coming and I'm getting left behind. And I think when we tell our kids you're sinning against the holy God when they're 2 years old and every other day until they're 15, I think you're going to set them up to be like, is God loving? Like, you have to almost do the back end of that conversation better than the forehand by showing that despite all of that, I'm with you. Despite all of your mess, like, I love you.
So I like Aaron and I, Gemma's only just over 2.5 now, coming up on 3. We have, the way I look at it is discipline is necessary. Similar reasons to what you guys have said, but I use it as an opportunity to provide an invitation, right? So it's like Gemma's 2.5, so her understanding is it's starting to be fleshed out, but it's not great. So to afterwards, as I'm sitting with her and holding her and showing her that I do love and care even though the consequence wasn't fun, to invite her to like, hey, like, you know, Jesus actually says that we should love people, and pushing your brother in the head and making him fall isn't loving, right? Like, let's,
but it's funny.
But it's fun.
But right, to use that opportunity to provide, I don't know. There's I've heard it said before that if you're trying to teach a man to sail, you don't just give him a boat and instructions, you provide him with a desire to do it. Right? So to show, to model for your kids through your life, through how you're disciplining them, to, if we're imaging Christ, it shouldn't be out of anger. You shouldn't discipline your kids when you're angry.
Yes.
You shouldn't. I think that reactionary discipline is often damaging because you're not thinking through what actually is the best way to deal with this. Mm-hmm. I recognize with young children, disciplining sooner rather than later is important, because if you, like, say with Gemma, if she does something, if 5 hours later I'm like, this would work perfect, and I go and discipline her, she won't necessarily even remember what she did, right? Yeah. So you have to be on it, but to still that reaction, if you feel in yourself, because that's the other human tendency, we're still wrestling with our old selves as well. So if you see an injustice and you want to just discipline your kid and give him a shake, it's maybe a good time to take a breath first.
Mm-hmm.
Or even start by taking your child close and holding them for a moment or two so that they can't continue the behavior, but so that you're not also just reacting to what they've done.
Sure.
Because I don't believe that reacting to child's engagement with the world, no matter how horrible it is, I don't believe that reacting is a good way to model what God does, because I don't believe that God reacts to us. I believe that he is methodical in what he
does. Here's something controversial. I agree with you. And I also don't think removal is the best answer either, because I really like the stage we're at with our kids at 11 and almost 9, where they come home and we were just in Grand Prairie and my daughter saw a friend at school and she was with another girl, and she comes home and is like, they're lesbians. They're 11 years old. They were kissing and stuff like that. And mom, and she was in the hot tub with Tanya, like, why do people do that? And it was a really cool conversation of, like, you know, sinfulness and way we choose to live and the way God has designed us to live. And you can just see her brain going like, oh man. And almost feeling sad for these girls that they're so out there. But we also teach them, like, you'll not be disrespectful towards them. You'll not, like, ignore them at school. Yeah.
So I guess that's where removal maybe looks different when you're at your stage. Because my stage is, like, Gemma's pushing Kendrin down the stairs. Oh, and if I tell
don't
her
remove
no
her from
and
that.
Just tell her that
no,
it's
I
not
meant,
loving.
Like, removal in the sense of, like, oh, we're going to Christian Life School now.
Yeah.
You'll
yeah,
never sure. experience that again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I don't agree with that, because I have had just such cool conversations with the kids. Natalia said, why do people swear? Like, man. I'm like,
well, like, I don't freaking know, man.
No, I'm just kidding. I actually said, it was not the best answer, but I said, they're not smart enough to. I'm like, they're actually so dumb that those are the only words they have left to use. They can't communicate their point in a way that's more articulate. And she's looking at me and Tanya's like, that's, but that's how it's funny, because when I was a kid, I swore, and I had a mentor that told me, like, are you that dumb? Like, those are the words you have to use to communicate a point.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's a really, so we,
yeah.
I just like the age of the kids where, you know, we can talk about, you know, discipline in a way. We don't discipline too much, because it's often like someone will have a freak out and be like, did that help? You know, like, does that make you feel better? And we have a more of a conversation about it. And I don't just thank God that we started young. And it's funny. I had like, if I raise my voice or I have to like say something, you know, the kids will find that like frustrating, but they've been always so close. Like every time when I come home from work, just jumping up and big hugs, and they've never felt distant, and they've always known I've loved them. So it's a really neat relationship to see.
Well, I think what you're saying is like, and for you, Corlin, you're a little bit farther, your kids are younger, but you reap what you sow.
That's right.
Because same with our kids, like obviously kids are kids, but like I actually quite enjoy being around my kids. They're not little terrors anymore.
Yeah.
For the most part, like there's times
their jokes are dumb and kind of boring.
But I'm like, I actually like really enjoy being that. You're not annoying, and you're not these terribly behaved children.
That's right.
So you reap what you sow. So I think, you know, for those first years of our kids, like it was really hard and sometimes embarrassing when my kid has a freak out in Walmart and I have to walk out and discipline and things like that. But I it's funny that we're talking about this, because this has actually been on my mind a lot lately. You know, this whole movement of like gentle parenting, which is just not parenting, because it's like, it's hard. It's hard to parent. And then I see these ideas that like, I'm going to let my kids decide the boundaries. And I'm like, well, you're just choosing not to be a parent.
Yeah.
Because that's your job, right? Yeah. And I know people that now they're reaping what they've sown, and their kids are terrible. And they're like, I don't like being around my children, and my kids are awfully behaved and they disrespect me. And I'm like, it's because you chose not to discipline them.
Yeah.
And you do. I mean, it's a principle that I think is so true. You reap what you sow. So to encourage parents when you have little kids, like, it's hard. And there was times when Molly and I were like, man, I don't know if I have any fight left in me to discipline kids. But it's like, nope.
Yeah.
We're gonna, because we know that in the long run, it's so beneficial for them, because they know, right? Authority. They know.
They become better employees. Do the workforce a favor and discipline your children.
Yeah, because I just look around and I'm like, you know, people complain about, oh, this generation of kids, they're so rude and disrespectful. I'm like, yeah, you're reaping what you've sown. Yeah. You've chosen not to be authority in your kids' lives. And like what you said now, like I'm trying to think, like, yes, we still discipline our kids, but it's rare. The heavy hand of discipline is rare now, because they've learned like, oh man, if I talk back or if I disrespect.
So I think it still is a something to be navigated carefully though. Cause if you swing to the other extreme, like I know individuals who have incredibly disciplined parents who like it, everything is very so teaching the law, all those things. And I swear, unless their parents aren't around, they don't look like they're having a good time in life.
Sure.
And that's sad. Like that's actually not Christ-like either. Right. So we serve a God who displayed his power as a pillar of fire in front of the Israelites to lead them out of Egypt. And yet Jesus taught his disciples to pray our Father, right? Like, so you can't be relational with a pillar of fire who just gives commandments. You can be relational with a God who cares, though. And so there is that two profound truths, right? We have the ability to call God Father and enter into his domain, and as sons and daughters relate with a Father who cares, but also to recognize that God is a just God and won't let sin go unpunished, right? Sure. So I think as a parent, we have to be aware of that, though, because if all you are is rigidity, you're also setting your child up for failure, because they're going to learn that there's a lot of stuff in life that rigidity, because of sinful humans, doesn't always work. It's kind of like reading Proverbs versus Ecclesiastes.
Sure. Yep. Okay. Corlin's got to go to work, right? So there we go. We'll wrap it up there. Episode 145. That was a good one, I think.
Yeah.
Hopefully our seven listeners will enjoy that. But please send us in questions or topics or follow-up things you want us to talk about. And we'll talk to you next time.